to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. We're live 8 to 10 on weekday mornings. We rebroadcast 8 to 10 on weekday evenings. We're heard on radio stations serving Oregon and California. And we are found online streaming at jeffexchange.org and ijpr.org. It's Wednesday, November 7th, 2018. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. In this hour, talking turkey about talking over the turkey. Not looking forward to Thanksgiving with the political opposite relatives. Marla Estes and Rob Schlapfer are here with ideas shortly, and you can join the conversation by phone and email. We'll talk about how in just a moment. First, let's talk about the weather. Here's our student assistant, Erica Soderstrom. Welcome, Erica.
Thank you, Jeffrey. The Southern Oregon Cascades and Siskiyous today will be sunny with a high near 43, and tonight mostly clear with a low around 20. In Yreka, it'll be sunny with a high near 59, and tonight clear with a low around 26. Weed and Mount Shasta will be sunny with a high near 55, and tonight clear with a low around 26. Redding and Red Bluff will be sunny with a high near 74, and tonight clear with a low around 48. The Klamath Basin will be sunny with a high near 49, and tonight clear with a low around 19. The Southern Oregon coast will have patchy fog before 11 a.m., otherwise sunny with a high near 57, and tonight clear with a low around 38. The Northern California coast will be mostly sunny with a high near 54, and tonight clear with a low around 39. Roseburg and the Umpqua Basin will have patchy morning fog, otherwise mostly cloudy, gradually becoming sunny with a high near 57. Tonight there will be patchy fog, otherwise increasing clouds with a low around 31. The Rogue Valley will have patchy freezing fog in the morning, mostly sunny with a high near 57. And tonight there will be patchy fog, otherwise increasing clouds with a low around 31. In Eugene and Springfield, there will be patchy morning fog before 10 a.m., otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 55. And tonight there will be patchy fog, otherwise partly cloudy with a low around 29.
And tomorrow at this time, we'll probably just say ditto because it looks like the forecast is going to change barely, if at all. We're just in this dry pattern that is not bringing any moisture on shore, at least not that's delivering any rain to us. And as a result, we have dry, warm days and dry, cold nights. And so we have, freeze warnings in Douglas County up the I-5 corridor. And in Humboldt County, away from the ocean, there's a frost advisory closer to the ocean in Humboldt and in inland Del Norte County. And then at the very same time, this is the mind-blowing part, there's a red flag warning for parts of the Sacramento Valley starting tonight and running into Friday because the winds are going to pick up. So with the heat where it is in the mid-70s in Redding, for example, and then with the humidity as low as it tends to be at this time with these conditions, the wind picking up just means that any fire that starts is going to spread fast. And we've seen that already this year. We've seen this movie. Let's not go down that road again. So just be careful with sparks the next couple of days. And thanks for listening to us on the Jefferson Exchange. We always appreciate your time and attention. If you'd like to join our conversation, you're more than welcome. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. We just finished an election. Can we get back to being neighbors again? Maybe a better question is, can we get back to being family again? Thanksgiving is coming up, another chance to gather with people we love and quite possibly avoid talking about politics and other tough subjects. Our guests this hour deal with this all the time. Marla Estes is the founder of Bridging the Divide. Rob Schlapfer created something called The Weekly Talk. It is all merging under the heading of Bridging the Divide now. Both are dedicated to getting people to see the people in each other and not the opponents. They'll offer a session this week in Medford and next week in Ashland called Holiday or Holler Day. Let's learn more about them and about what they're doing. Marla Estes, thanks for joining us again on The Exchange.
Thank you, Jeff. Great to be here.
Rob Schlapfer, good to see you once again.
Great to be in your new digs here.
Oh, yeah. Welcome to the new studio.
Very nice.
Getting
very
blinded
nice.
By the light from the outside.
Yeah, well deserved after all these years.
Thank you. So let's talk about how you guys got started doing this. And whoever went first can go first.
Well, for me, it happened on November 9th, 2016, and I woke up that morning thinking I have to do something about the polarity, bridging the divide. I didn't know at all how that was going to happen. And a few months later, I met Rob, who had already been doing talks on that nature, and the rest is history. So we've been doing a pretty much nonstop talks since last June, a year ago June.
And who are the people who are showing up for this?
Well, I would say we don't ask for affiliation. We find that would be divisive in itself. So we just kind of gauge. I think it's mostly progressives. Yeah. Although I call them the bi-curious, because often they what we get is the pulse is pretty much we can't keep on doing things the way we're doing them, and what can we do? And so the people who tend to come regularly have reported being more calm about things, being able to see other perspectives, catching themselves in their own double standards, which I love, their confirmation biases, all of that stuff. So it's you know, from the bottom up, a change.
Now, Rob, you were doing this before the election of 2016, right?
Yeah, I started in the late summer of 2016 doing talks in Medford. And it's interesting, I'm a former evangelical pastor and whatnot. And at the time, you know, we were looking at Hillary Clinton kind of continuing the country's kind of leftward tilt in the Obama administration and whatnot. But and I'm one of the first talks I did was how do we get beyond left and right? And I was really pitching it more to the right. You know, how do we bring these folks into the center a little bit more? But of course, the election changed all that. And about halfway through our first season, it became obvious to me that we had this huge elephant in the room, and that was the election of Donald Trump. And people were so angry about it, and there was so much visceral moral outrage that we literally couldn't deal with the topics that we were trying to get to with the weekly talk, because we were trying to look at all kinds of, you know, issues and whatnot. And
not just about talking, but about the things you wanted to talk about.
The issues themselves, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we continued to do that, but increasingly, and you know, one of the reasons why Marla and I have kind of merged under Bridging the Divide is, I mean, we did a bunch of talks over the summer on, you know, racism and victimhood culture and gender, and we looked at all the things that are really dividing people. And I came away realizing that, you know, we really cannot talk about these issues until we really, really hone down on our operating systems, our cognitive biases, how we process information. And that really is the, you know, the thrust of what we do. And it's a little bit different than there are a lot of bridging groups out there. What makes our work a little bit different is that we really lift the hood and get into the science. We do a lot of emphasis on neurobiology and cognitive psychology and evolutionary psychology to get people to get a sense of what it means to be human first before we actually get into talking about politics.
So, Marla, you mentioned confirmation bias is also negativity bias. So we do tend to think some bad things first. So you're getting into all that, I imagine, and helping people realize what they're likely to do just because they're human beings.
Right.
Right. So how I frame it is that we have these things that are on autopilot. Our tribalism's on autopilot. Autopilot, us and them, our cognitive biases are being triggered. So in my view, a lot of people don't even recognize they're being triggered. They think this is my truth, this is, you know, my outrage. But once we realize that we really need to learn how to regulate our nervous systems before we can get into these difficult conversations, psychologically, emotionally, cognitively, then we can really sit down and have some exchange and meeting of the minds.
How much do you guys deal with outside forces, though? Because even if we're the most open-minded person in the world, if we spend our time marinating in political information, if we you know, spend a lot of time on opinion pages or websites that think like we do, or a couple of TV channels or talk radio stations that tend to go one way, I mean, we're sort of taking what we got inside and leaving it over to somebody else to help us decide, aren't we?
Well, one of the things we do cover in all of that is how to look at media, social media and media, how to get a more balanced point of view, how to dissect if an article is biased or not, how to get a differing point of view. So we cover all that, too.
Well, one of the first the talk that caught Marla's eye was an ad in the Messenger locally that got her to my talks was I did a talk called Why Do We Disagree About the Facts? And we got into a big topic is motivated reasoning. It's one of the biggest insights from the social sciences in the last 10 years is this idea that we are not intuitive scientists so much as we're intuitive politicians. We have a built-in press secretary, so to speak. Uh-huh. And that's just how we're wired. That's how our minds evolved. And there's some really terrific social science that we try and bring in a popular way, again, so that people can connect with their Stone Age minds, so to speak, in a practical way. And yeah, a big thing that we push back on is social media. We now know that social media has really had some destructive effects. consequences, particularly with young people. You know, suicide rates among young women are skyrocketing. And there's a lot of people that attribute it to social media. The moral outrage culture, the call-out culture that you see on both sides, both extremes, you know, we really try and get people out of that world into a place where it's face-to-face, it's voices talking. You know, we really believe strongly that people have to get out of, away from the screens and into dialogue, whether it's over a meal or what we do in small groups, you know, facing each other, really talking.
Rob Schlapfer and Marla Estes are the people of Bridging the Divide. They'll be offering a session called Thanksgiving Holiday or Holler Day this Friday at 7 at the Medford Library, next Friday at 7 at the Ashland Library. We'll talk more about that, and you can join us as we talk about how to get through talking to people about things we don't like to share with each other. Back in a moment on The Exchange. Back on the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio. Who's going to be at your Thanksgiving dinner this year? Some relatives that you love dearly but never talk about much more than the weather with? You are not alone. There are lots of people who share common backgrounds and community with people who they don't feel like they're in a community with in the sense of politics and other difficult subjects. And our guests this hour help people deal with that. Marla Estes and Rob Schlapfer work together for something called Bridging the Divide. It's their two efforts have merged over time from what Rob used to do called the Weekly Talk. And they're offering a session coming up this week in Medford and next week in Ashland called Thanksgiving Holiday or Holler Day. And it's really about helping find some place to talk to people that we might not necessarily agree with. Join the conversation on The Exchange. Either share a story about a previous situation where you were trying to find common ground with someone, or if you're just looking for suggestions on how to do it. We'd love to hear from you at 800-838-3760 by phone. By email, it's jx@jeffnet.org. The stuff that you guys do in trying to get people to talk to each other, to let their guard down, to not be so instantly defensive or aggressive, how Sisyphean a task does this feel at times? You're really pushing a boulder up a hill?
It depends on the day. But I'm very heartened because, as I mentioned before, the people who come regularly really report these changes that are slow and sustainable. That's what I'm looking for. I'm not even looking for changes on points of view of issues. Right. It's really from the inside out. And I feel like, it might be too little too late, but for me, bridging is the only way I can see going forward. Somebody getting in a little more power than the other side isn't going to, half the country's always going to be pissed off. So how do we really bridge with other voters? That's what also, I'm not that concerned about the administration, mm-hmm. but how do we really build a new citizenship?
Mm. Which raises the question about this election, because it was observed by a couple of people, and it probably polluted my own thinking. That is what happened. You hear what somebody else says?
Good noticing.
Pick it up. Yeah, that it does seem like the increase in intensity on both sides just made it seem like there's no reaching out at all. This election was just a continuation of the previous elections where the divisions are great. Did you guys get that sense too?
Yeah,
the doubling down. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and again, the social media and the networks, the cable news networks have really become more divided in the Trump era. CNN has virtually become the anti-Trump network, and I think that has had a lot to do with it. I mean, we've always had Fox, which is presented, the view from the right.
But how often do people do the things they do in reaction to what other people do? Would CNN have become so much the anti-Trump network if Trump hadn't come on as the anti-CNN pretty much from the get-go?
Yeah. For every action, there's an opposite and equal reaction. That's one of the key ideas that we bring into the talks is that, you get this dichotomy going.
Which raises the question for you guys that you're doing this small local effort, probably on a shoestring budget, I'm thinking, and you've got this multi-billion-dollar industry arrayed against you that finds profit in keeping people angry.
Totally.
Well, that's why I think it has to happen at the community level. That's what I'm talking about and thinking about is how do we impact the people here?
Because, Do the people who listen to political talk radio, for example, ever come through your door? You mentioned that this tends to be a left kind of
I've been on Bill Maher's program a couple of times, plugging the weekly talk. And we do get a lot of conservatives. We're in Eagle Point. We're doing the third of three talks up in Eagle Point tomorrow, where we've been bringing this material to an audience that we kind of expected would be a little more conservative, being up in the north end of the valley like that. We've actually been pulling in a good number of progressives up there as well. These little, enclaves of progressivism up there, which is kind of interesting.
But we get more of a variation there, and in Medford too. So we are making a dent in the conservative part, and the fact that Eagle Point is more conservative and has us come up there, and that's going to continue every month into 2019, is a real tribute to, I think, the fact that we have been able to find a way of talking so that neither side is completely alienated.
You mentioned in starting your sessions that you don't want to hear what people's political views are. So I wonder how careful, though, you have to wander in, though, for how you phrase your thing so somebody doesn't rule you out instantly. It's like, oh, boy, more of these lefty handholders from Ashland or whatever they might think.
Well, one of the nicest compliments that we've gotten consistently from people is that we're fair. I try, because I have a background in the conservative world. I was never really a hardcore conservative as a Christian pastor, and I taught theology, and I was involved in publishing quite a bit. I was pushing back on the religious right as a Christian back in the day. So, I bring a sensitivity to the right into our discussions, which tend to be with a lot of folks on the left. One of the things we really try and do is get people to expand their awareness of what conservatives believe. Jonathan Haidt, who you may know, who has been a real influence on this issue of political polarizations, he talks about the conservative advantage. And studies show that people on the right actually understand the left fairly well, whereas folks on the left do not really understand conservatism. And there's some good reasons for that. One of the things that we try and do in the talks is present ideas from conservatives in a way so that people can go, I understand that, so that people's, horizon is enlarged a little bit. And, when we have people say, they can take in other facts than the ones they already have. That's a big goal of ours, is to be able to take in new facts without feeling like it's a zero-sum game, that they have to eliminate what they come to the table with to begin with.
Do you try it in the other direction? Do you present ideas to conservatives and say, these are things that are tenets of X, or don't even tell them what they're tenets of? And then,
The weekly talk itself, when I started, that really was the goal, was to bring a lot of the social science. We looked at the genetics of original sin. We looked at, is Jesus really the same? We looked at a lot of these kinds of topics. So we kind of laid a lot of those foundations. But, it was the fact that we were getting so many progressives coming to the talks and not conservatives so much, that kind of changed our... So there are people that have said, you sound kind of conservative, and I am not a conservative at all. But, we did a talk on race this summer, for example, and I presented the view from the black conservatives and, black progressives, and put it up there. Most people had no idea that there was such a thing as the black right. But there is, and it's a really vibrant movement that's rising up today. And I think it's important that progressives understand it, at least, so that they can think intelligently about it. And to me, that's a key to having good conversations, is that people really understand what the other side is saying. Try and put the best construction on it so that they can have a real fruitful dialogue.
But I get where people would feel defensive just kind of walking into a conversation like this, because even if somebody has said, okay, I understand where you're coming from, almost instantly I could hear the other voice saying, no, you don't, because that's not what I'm saying. It's really this, not this. For example, when people say, look, how about we have, everybody gets health care, like, socialism. And when the label's slapped on, bam, I mean, the gates come down, don't they?
Well, and we do some front-loading at the beginning to say, try to be an anthropologist from Mars, try to have Zen beginner's mind, really bracket your opinions for a while, and no one's got a knife to your throat, so calm yourself down. And we ask people to listen the whole way through, because it's true that sometimes they hear something that is against their cherished belief and they walk out, and without hearing the beginning, middle, and end, and the conclusion. But one thing we really, the word diversity is a really buzzword right now, but not so much viewpoint diversity. So we really highlight that a lot.
It's interesting that that people do talk about diversity, but they tend to mean of people and not so much of viewpoints.
Right.
Right. It's a big problem in college campuses, which have become overwhelmingly left of the left in the since the 1990s, really. I mean, it's having an impact on students who are not getting, you know, the other side of the story at all. And again, it gets back to what I said earlier about John Haidt's observation about the conservative advantage. Why is it that folks on the left tend to, on study after study, tend to not really understand basic conservative ideas? It's because there are very, very few conservative professors in colleges today, particularly in the soft science, the social sciences. So they're really not getting a full perspective on issues.
But and I'm not defending any political slant one way or the other on college campuses. But I mean, it seems like they'd be exposed to these things factually and historically, if not philosophically. From they don't need to learn this from a conservative professor to learn what conservative thought is, do you?
Well, not necessarily, but you do find when you look at the studies, there's a whole literature coming from people who are not on the right. The social science have really become overwhelmed with progressive ideas. And there's been a lot of entrenchment around that. And Jonathan Haidt and Greg Lukianoff's book, The Coddling of the American Mind, which is out now.
The Coddling of the American Mind.
They really open up what's been going on campuses. And, there is this outrage machine on the right that feeds this campuses are all commune on that kind of a thing. But there's a lot of truth in that because, when you look at the data, for example, one of the studies I just looked at, communications departments in universities, which house journalism students, there's an effective 60-0 ratio of left to right professors. And you see that in the social sciences, 20-1 in psychology and what have you. So, because the people on the left and right kind of unconsciously have a certain ideological perspective, it's not like there's an overt censoring of conservative materials. It's just natural for people who feel a certain way to kind of present their ideas in a better light. It gets back to this idea of motivated reasoning. We tend to root for our side even when we're trying to be objective.
I find myself smiling because I can hear David Brinkley's voice from many years ago saying, people keep complaining about that journalists are liberals. He says, I think the issue is that liberals are journalists. It's the profession, kind of professional
they lead
to.
Yeah, a lot of it has to do with personality metrics. It is true. People that are more open to experience tend to be on the left. The people go into journalism schools. They don't go into business schools. So it's more of a natural breaking of where people find themselves. But it has an impact on students who don't have that. They don't have that relationship with a conservative to where they can really, get those ideas, presented to them.
David Brinkley, wherever you are, forgive me for the impression. We're talking to Rob Schlapfer and Marla Estes about bridging the divide, about getting people to let down some of their defenses and let in other viewpoints and be able to talk to each other, including, for example, at Thanksgiving. And they're offering a session coming up this Friday in Medford and next Friday in Ashland, both at the libraries at 7 p.m. Thanksgiving holiday or holler day, a chance to learn how to have a civil conversation about politics. You can join our conversation here on The Exchange with stories from past Thanksgivings or questions for our guests. 800-838-3760 by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here is a call from Terry in Eugene. Welcome to The Exchange. Thanks for waiting.
3-8-3-7-60 by phone.
All right, Terry, since you're listening on the radio, I can tell you're 10 seconds behind us. Make sure you turn the radio down, listen on the phone. I'll pick you up in just a moment. Here's Rika in Grants Pass.
Good morning.
Hi.
Good morning.
You're so right about Facebook. It's like a toxic echo chamber. And you don't really get people motivated to do anything on there. At least in my experience.
Because you're talking to people who already feel the way you do?
Well, it's not so much that as, they might feel completely different or not, but you can't really get their attention. Mm-hmm. And I got out this last week handing out leaflets to businesses downtown about our expected water rate rise here. And this week we're going to be voting on it. The council's going to be voting on it. And I had forgotten how much fun that is.
Getting out and talking to people?
Talking to people, going mm-hmm. into their businesses, and just meeting them and talking, and they really appreciate getting information.
All right. Thanks for the story, Rick. Appreciate that.
You know, it's really interesting. People have to remember that writing, the act of writing, is a new adaptation for humans. You know, we have this long, long, rich history, our Stone Age minds, where our brains develop in very social environments, where we were face on face and what have you. And so, you know, even writing itself is a new kind of a medium. You put that into the social media environment and you just get some really disastrous results because you don't have all the nuances of eye contact and face, which is, again, why we really, really push people wherever they are.
Emojis don't do it?
Yes. No, they don't. It's an attempt. But, you know, you really have, you know, the role of the human voice. There's been some really great study on our voice communication, how important it is to how our brains are wired. And so you really have to get people looking at each other, talking to each other to have a decent conversation. You can't really do it on social media.
Let's try this again with Terry and Eugene. Are you there, Terry?
Yes.
Welcome to the Exchange.
Hi. Yeah, I wanted to first tell you, JPR, how much I appreciate this program and compliment the presenters on what they're doing. I'm from Eugene. I'd like to know if they ever get to Eugene. I'm off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate that, Terry.
Yeah, have us come up there. We have been to Bend, the UU up there. Engaged us to come up. We're going to go to Grants Pass at the UU there. So that's a really good vehicle. But usually we need some contact person there to help market and find the venue. So approach us and we'll come talk to your group.
The UU being the Unitarian Universalist
yes.
Fellowships. Okay.
Yes.
The one we're doing in Grants Pass, you know, we do this three-part series and we start with the whole thing on critical thinking. And we're really hoping to get out and do more of that because that really lays the foundation for any discussion of politics is to talk about how to think. And a lot of people need some help
and
in that
area. And how they feel.
And how to feel.
Well,
yeah.
A funny story about that because as we were sitting here getting ready to do the segment, the NPR newscast was on and the funder credit from National was about some place that promotes critical thinking.
Heard, yeah.
And your ears went right up,
yeah.
Rob Schlapfer.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
So this is something you guys are big on. So what is missing?
Critical.
Did we once know how to do critical thinking? Are we worse at it now than we once were, in your opinion?
Well, yeah, I think part of it is we don't really understand. Again, it gets back to understanding what it means to be human. We spend a lot of time looking at how cognition evolved. Because our tribalism is deeply rooted in our biology. And so, yeah, I mean, we used to teach critical thinking in schools probably a little bit better. I think the media culture has turned us into more passive agents. And now the screen culture is really making us very passive. And we've had this thing called the Big Sort. You're probably familiar with Bill Bishop's book, The Big Sort. We've divided up into all these little communities of like-mindedness, like Ashland, where—
Political enclaves, yeah.
Right, where there's no disconfirmation in the system. You have to have disconfirmation to have real critical thinking. You have to have some skepticism. You have to have back and forth. That's why viewpoint diversity, we think, is really, really important because how do you overcome confirmation bias with disconfirmation in the mix? So, you know, we really, really hone in on critical thinking skills.
And part of it is that we encourage people and model, like, how to get beyond their cognitive dissonance because it makes you feel really wobbly at first to have your ideas challenged and your values sometimes. So that's a really important thing. I know for me personally, there was a period last summer where I felt like I didn't know what side was up. I was getting so many new ideas. I was being so challenged that I would like hold on to tabletops and go, okay, this is real. It's almost like being in an avalanche, and they say it's so dangerous because you don't know which way to dig. You don't know which way is up and which way is down. So that's really something I try to support for people. Like when they report saying, oh, I've really, you know, I have this cognitive dissonance a lot. I'm feeling really wobbly, and I say, I'm sorry and congratulations. Because it means you're going through this passage of being able to tolerate the anxiety with new ideas.
You're experiencing life without the training wheels.
Exactly. Yeah. And this thing about what you mentioned before, the ability to admit we're wrong. Like sometimes in groups I'll say, so who here has never been wrong? Raise your hand. Mm. And everyone laughs. Or I say, who here has never changed their minds? Everyone laughs. But we try to bring humor to this too. So it kind of lightens it up and we can laugh at our human foibles.
Well, we used the idea of the red pill, which, you know, granted, it has lots of application. And we showed a film called The Red Pill. But again, we think the key to bridging the divide is setting aside non-facts and engaging and taking in new facts. And that's very hard for people. But how do you overcome the psychology of that is where we start.
I'm going to ask you that when we come back from this break, because we don't seem to agree on the facts either. But we'll come back and talk more with Rob Schlapfer and Marla Estes, the conversation they'll be having this weekend and next. So Friday night at the Medford Library, next Friday night at the Ashland Library. Thanksgiving holiday or holler-day? What do you think about that? Join us on The Exchange by phone and email when we come back in a minute 15. Segment on today's final segment on today's Jefferson Exchange. I'm Jeffrey Riley. Thank you for listening. We are talking about talking in this hour of the program because it can be a little hard in America. This is not just related to this election, but after a lot of elections and a lot of other incidents in the country, it's just hard for us to get to where we can talk to people who we disagree with. And for that matter, do we even hang around people that we might disagree with? Rob Schlapfer and Marla Estes have been working for this for a number of years. Their program is called Bridging the Divide, and they'll be offering a special one coming up this week and next about basically surviving Thanksgiving dinner with people with whom you disagree. You may love them, but you don't like what they think politically. How do you get into those conversations? Join us on The Exchange with your perspective, either in the past or some questions for our guests now. 800-838-3760 by phone. Our email address is jx@jeffnet.org. So just before we got to the break, you said when we can agree on the facts, it's a good place to start. We're not even often there, though. I mean, look for example, at the most recent case. It's like there are maybe 5,000, mostly women and children, staggering, it seems like, toward the American border, and they might get here in a couple of months. Okay, a few weeks maybe. But then we get other people saying, oh, no, it's more like 6,000 people, and there are terrorists and people from the Middle East in there. So we don't even agree on the facts of who's in that caravan or how big it is.
Yeah, well, and again, it gets back to, you know, this idea of motivated reasoning. We understand that how we view the world, we tend to isolate facts that agree with our preconceived notions of things. I use this word consilience with reference to our work. It's the idea of bringing different sets of facts together. It's an idea that comes out of science where, you know, where there are some problems that are so complex that you have to bring in all the various disciplines to solve them. And in other than, you know, rather than having kind of a siloed approach, we need to do that the same way in our politics, which is why viewpoint diversity is really so important. There are lots of, you know, you can amass a bunch of facts together to make an argument, but you can leave out a lot of the other facts. And I think that's what happens. You turn on MSNBC, you get one set of facts put together in a way to make an argument. You turn on Fox, you get a different set of facts. Often they are real facts on both sides, but they've been isolated from each other. And you have to bring them together to kind of see the whole, to see the whole picture.
There's an associative element to this too that I noticed in actually examining the speeches of George W. Bush, that he would say, since 9/11, we've had to be really concerned about terrorism, period. Saddam Hussein, it didn't matter what the rest of the sentence was, immediately the connection was made in people's minds between Saddam Hussein and 9/11 because of the proximity of those statements. So people can use facts in ways that even though they are factually correct, because they look intermingled, they seem to be of a piece.
Right.
Which brings us back to not just the facts themselves and how they're presented, but also the way we tend to cast, I feel this way, therefore it's true.
Emotional reasoning as opposed to critical reasoning.
Okay, yeah, right. So how do you pierce through this place where people A, state their opinions like they're facts, and B, state the future like it's a fact? When we cut taxes, the economy will zoom. When we protect everybody with Medicare for all, the economy will zoom, whatever the story might be, but future tense and not always right.
Well, a lot of times you really do have to look at data. And of course, looking at data has its own sets of problems. But in the talks that we've done, whether it's been race or gender, we've just put data up on the board, really good critical data. And that tends to solve a lot of the problems, because much of what people believe is stuff that they've heard. It's not demonstrably true. It's just the stuff that gets repeated over and over again. On both sides of the divide, there's a lot of things that people, these kind of mantras that people engage with, that really are not borne out when you look at the data.
So Marla, let's come to a point where how can you be respectful of another person's point of view when there's a little voice in your head, maybe a big voice in your head, screaming, oh, what a moron?
Well, we're going to cover a lot of that in our talks, but the things that I've learned personally is to put the relationship first, the love and the relationship first. The other thing that I've noticed...
Which is easier at a Thanksgiving dinner table with people at least you know versus people you don't know.
Right. Mm-hmm. But it's a good testing ground. But because on the flip side, they know how to trigger you more than the stranger does.
Right, that's true. They know your soft points.
Right. So you've got this other like personal history running. But I'll just share an anecdote that happened to me last year. I have an acquaintance who was a Trump supporter. I didn't know her very well. We were kind of thrown together. And... we started talking about it. It's Stephen Covey who said, seek first to understand, then be understood. So I was mostly listening. And at one point in a certain context, I said, you know, and she knew I didn't vote for Trump. She said, I was really kind of ashamed of my party when I realized that a whole demographic had been really ignored. And her eyes welled up with tears. She said, don't feel ashamed. I said, no, it was good. It was a realization. It was a wake-up call for me. But it changed the whole tenor of the relationship, of the conversation, because I think this humility is what – there's a lot of bridging organizations right now. We don't hear about them because they're not sexy for the news.
Right.
Every day my inbox gets a new bridger in there. And one of the things I think is helpful is that if I can own something that's not so good about my side, although I have less and less a side anymore, but also maybe point out something good about their side. I like that idea. And I think what it does is it because what we need to do for each other is de-escalate the charge, right? And we also need to see each other as humans with some respect. I think in these conversations, to keep coming back to something you respect or love or admire, also about the person, like the sandwich effect, you say something good, you say something critical, you say something good again, not in a manipulative way. It has to be sincere, just like Dale Carnegie would say. It has to be sincere. The other things that I noticed, one of the things that I've done is because I've educated myself more of why people did vote for Trump, and I really understand a lot more, and it's not homogeneous, which a lot of people, I think,
that's the thing, again, by talking about black conservatives. There is nothing monolithic about any group of anybody.
Absolutely.
But that's what we're all doing, yeah. Not all of us. Many of us are still in this black and white thinking. That's another thing we really try to train people about.
Psychological splitting.
The both, we need the both and, not to, and any anytime something's too one-sided, it's a time to be suspicious. But
and is a really great word for bridging. And
instead
this
of
is
but
true.
Or,
here's my perspective. And this is also true. Oh, that's okay. It's not a zero-sum game. Being able to take in new ideas shouldn't be something that frightens us, and yet it often is.
But you know, the square one is a hard one. For you guys, I would think. I mean, people come to your sessions because they want to learn more how to do this, but then there are lots of people who don't particularly care. They don't think they're wrong.
Most people.
And in fact, what was it I saw? I think it was on Samantha Bee's show, but they were interviewing some guy outside a Trump rally, and the way he phrased, I don't consort with that kind, or words to that effect, he didn't even call them people.
Yeah,
dehumanizing. But that kind made it sound like something other than a human being.
Yeah. We talk about that dehumanizing, and it happens on both sides. I mean, we have lots of examples.
Oh, yeah.
But one of the things we are doing is we're offering, starting in January, a year-long course that will meet once a month, where the first quarter we are just dealing with what we call the operating systems. So we're dealing, before we talk about issues, it's a really good place to go in. We'll have exercises, films, clips, things like that. Then the second half we'll get more into, we'll get more into foundations. I think a lot of people don't understand civics. I know I didn't up till 2 years ago, and I'm still learning.
Well, the three branches of government, and one of those branches is actually two parts, you know, the House and the Senate. It seems like a lot of people keep running aground on that one.
Right.
Not just that, but, you know, one of the things I find is most people do not understand that America is a democratic republic. It's not a democracy. That's been a shock to a lot of folks in our audience who tend to think, well, we're a democracy like the European kind of democratic countries. But we are a republic, and it's different.
Which means representative democracy,
yes,
right?
Representative democracy. But there are things that transcend democratic votes in the Constitution, certain other things that are basic rights. We don't have rights from the government. We don't get our rights from the government in America, for example. So there are things that transcend just the democratic process. And it's little civics-like things. You know, I've wanted to do a series of talks. If I was to do another season of the weekly talk, I was going to do it on Understand America, to go in at a popular level and just try and give some civic stuff and bring in people from the community who have some knowledge. Because, yeah, we really need to have a better understanding of how government really works.
And you say the rights don't come from the government, but the fact is that the assumption that the rights are there unless restricted by the government is, you know, that has not been universally shared since day one. That's why there is a Bill of Rights.
Exactly.
Because there was a faction that said we have to spell these out.
Right. Totally.
And another thing I think that's not well understood is free speech. So that's another thing that we do a special talk on.
Yeah.
So and then the third part of this course would be then talking about the issues, immigration, guns, abortion, so that we're calmed down, we understand fundamentals. Oh, another part of this would be how did right and left get so divided, and starting historically. So we really, what we hope to is both educate and inspire, because at the same time we're bringing in stories about bridgers, about people who are reaching across the aisle, whether it's individuals or groups or movements. And I think that's really important that a study just came out called Hidden Tribes, where they're finding only about 15% of the extremes on both sides altogether are running the hyper-partisanship.
Yep.
But they're people of influence, they're people with money, they're the media, and it's up to us, this exhausted majority in the middle, what David Brooks calls us, to come together in a new way and have
a
voice.
There's a multi-billion dollar industry geared to keeping us angry with one another.
They're doing a really good job.
Aren't they, though? Let's take a call here from Grumpy John in Grants Pass. Welcome to The Exchange with Marla Estes and Rob Schlapfer.
Thank you very much, Jeffrey. Listen, I need to challenge your basic assumption. Let's give you two facts. Number one, I'll just say the name Galileo. Number two, the arc was 75 feet wide, according to cubits. The dinosaurs that coexisted with the humans were 80 feet long in their body. They wouldn't have even been able to turn around or fit side by side on the ark. Okay, so you have people here, Jeffrey, who are trying to have medievalists compromise with Galilean thinkers.
You are being facetious about the Ark and the dinosaurs, right?
I am not. This is the facts. Look it up, Jeffrey. If these people believe that humans coexisted on the planet with dinosaurs, we are dealing with insanity, Jeffrey, and our vice president is one of these people who also believes this. Please do not impeach Trump without getting rid of Pence first. He would start Armageddon because that's the way he gets his second coming.
All right, Grumpy John, thanks for that. I want to have time for a guest to respond. So go ahead and get started, Rob.
Well, you know, I did a talk called Post-Theism, which gets into why it is that people believe what they believe. And, you know, this would be a whole conversation to have. But, you know, again, in our talks, we're not suggesting that people have to compromise with non-facts. And we have very clearly, you know, we present evolutionary science and what have you in our talks. But, you know, the issue of why Christian fundamentalists still exist and believe these things is pretty complicated. But again, it gets back to our minds were not designed to understand the world. We were not designed to do literature and art and all these other things. Human cognition developed in an evolutionary context, a very social context. It had to do with solving social problems. And in some contexts, it's more adaptive to believe something that is not true. And that's kind of what the science is getting at. And that explains a lot of why people believe things that, you know, that most of us find, you know, absurd if we have a scientific perspective.
So it's a go along, get along kind of thing. It's easier to get in this society if you agree with whatever.
Yeah, that's a well understood principle of evolutionary psychology, is that, you know, again, you know, our minds are designed for an adaptive world, not of the real world necessarily. So, yeah, we have this rich tradition of religion, which is very adaptive. adaptive. It has helped societies work together cohesively and create the kind of workable institutions that we do have. So again, this is a big, long question, but yes, certainly, we certainly need to push back on non-scientific thinking. But there are good reasons why people believe these things. It's not just that they're completely deluded.
We just a few seconds left here, and I apologize to our listeners. There's some construction work going on outside the studio. We're not quite finished with the building yet. You have a facilitator coming for the Thanksgiving holiday or holiday?
Anna Cassily, who's local. She's a trainer for communications and for conflict resolution. So she'll be doing a number of exercises and tips. So she really rounds out. So on these presentations, we're doing some fun Saturday Night Live clips. We're doing some storytelling where people are bringing in their own bridging stories. Somebody's recorded one from back east too. So we're really trying to make it uplifting, inspiring, and useful. So people will really come away with tips.
And what is the website for people to look you up now?
Bridging.online.
Bridging.online.
Right.
Just .online.
.online.
Okay.
It's one of those new...
One of the new domain names. Okay.
Yeah.
So Bridging the Divide is where you'll find Marla Estes and Rob Schlapfer. Always a pleasure to talk to you guys
about
talking.
Thank you so much, Jeff.
Thank you so much, Jeff.